Welcome to the Kenkel Fritz and Friends podcast. If you want to hear the show, you can find it on Family Life Radio. If you want to find a station near you, you can go to myflr.org or stream it online.
Okay, so you have this amazing career. I mean, you're being successful, you're climbing the ladder, things are going great, and God says, hold up, I want you to quit all that. It's like, what? Yeah. Well, our guest today is Paula Ferris. Here's her book. It's called Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of a True Calling. Yeah, Paula, you had two dream jobs. You were on Good Morning America. You were on The View. Well, we're excited to have Paula Ferris with us today. She's got a book called Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of True Calling. And you did have dream jobs, Paula. I mean, you were on TV, Good Morning America, and on The View, some pretty amazing things that you were involved in, and then you left all of that. And, you know, today's conversation will center around faith and calling. And so I'm just intrigued by a story. You told a story about a man named David Shedd who provided a template for you to determine that calling. Just tell us about that. What's that all about?
Well, the whole book's about like why I pumped the brakes at the height of my career when I had my two dream jobs, anchoring Good Morning America weekends and co-hosting The View. And I pumped the brakes because I really felt like that's what God was calling me to, as crazy as it sounded. But calling's one of those words that I think we throw around, especially in faith circles. And it's so ambiguous and nebulous, and it's almost always related to what we do, right? And it's almost like find your calling, find your purpose, but it's always related to a career, right? And so I'm struggling with all of this, like how much of my value and my worth I'd poured into my jobs. And then when I pumped the brakes, I didn't know who I was outside of those jobs. And it kind of launched me on this journey to figure out like how to unpack calling, but also like how do I find a true identity outside of what I do, especially when faith circles are like, find your calling. And it's almost always career related, right?
True.
The one thing you're supposed to do. So in this journey, I end up interviewing this gentleman. He was actually a former spy from the CIA.
Ooh, I love spy stuff.
I know, it was so cool. And I was just interviewing him for my podcast. It was just my previous podcast, let me clarify, when I worked at ABC, I did a podcast called Journeys of Faith, and I would speak to people of different faiths about what they believed and why. So David happened to be one of my guests because I'm like, I want to interview a spy. And he started talking about calling, how he has a real passion for really helping people to understand what it means to be called. And so I said, unpack this for me, because I don't know how, when somebody asks what it means to be called, like, I don't know how to answer that. And I certainly don't know how to answer it outside of what I do for a living. So he said something, and it was like one of those aha moments. And he said, when you're called to something, Paula, it's three things. And, you know, I've kind of morphed it into something a little bit more simple, but it basically what it is, it's what are you good at? What do you love? And what do trusted people around you know and recognize that you're good at and that you love? He's like, that's how you know you're being called to something. And so, for instance, like I have a good friend who is a teacher and she just left the profession. She's like, I was good at it, but I never loved it.
Mm.
So there's a difference. What are you good at and what do you love? And what do trusted people around you know that you're good at and that you love? But the more I unpack this, I was like, because I thought I was good at being a broadcaster. And you know, that's what I loved. And people said I was good at it. But when I went a little bit deeper, it's more like your innate talents and abilities, right? It's who you were uniquely created to be, how God designed you. God created me to be very nosy, you guys. I've just been inherently curious my whole life, okay? Like my nickname growing up in Jackson, Michigan was Paula 20 Questions. I would never shut up. So I'm like, I'm curious. I like to challenge and champion people. I really, really like to advocate for people. I'm a question asker.
Well, I would think that would make you a phenomenal interviewer as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But see, now, and this is where I've discovered a lot of freedom in like, what are you good at and what do you love and what a trusted people notice you're good at and you love? Because you peel back those layers, you guys, and it's not just, oh, you're a good DJ. It's, I'm an effective communicator, or I like to bring joy to people's lives, right?
Right.
So when I was able to peel back those layers and, okay, I'm a curious question asking lover of people, I like to champion and challenge, I can take that. That's who I'm uniquely called to be and the unique talents and gifts that I have. It made me a good broadcaster, but I don't need to limit myself. Where can I take those gifts and talents into other areas and use my ability to ask questions and to champion and challenge people? So it really was a freeing message for me. But I really think when we're thinking about what we're called, when we throw that word around, Are you good at it? Do you love it? And do trusted people notice that you're good at it and you love it? So that was really, for me, you know, one of those aha moments, courtesy of a former spy, David Shedd.
Yeah. I like getting advice from spies.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I do too.
You know, I just realized, you know, for those that are watching the video podcast of this and they just tuned in and we have been talking for a while before this started, they notice you're holding a dog.
This is a stuffed animal. This is just a stuffed animal.
Mm-hmm. Very
Everyone
animated.
Thinks she's so little. If you're watching though, I mean, she is she's 5 pounds. She's like, what are you doing, Mom? She's a little Cavapoo, and she just got in the room yesterday, so she's
adorable.
Really little now.
She's beautiful.
She is. She was supposed to be about 15 pounds, but was apparently the runt of the litter. She's really sweet. So
Cutie.
She's Cavapoo. Her name is Addison. We call her Addie.
Addie.
So.
I love it when people name their dogs adult names.
Do you like that?
You know? Yeah, I do.
Like Kankle Fritz?
Well, no.
How would you feel about somebody naming their dog after you?
Well, actually, people do like name their dog goofy names like that. But I have a friend whose dog's name is Carl, and I think that's hilarious, you know.
That's hilarious.
Carl! Carl, shit! You know, it's just funny.
That's
exactly.
So good.
Stop.
What are your dog's names? You have a couple of rescues.
Well, we stopped finally, except that my husband wasn't in favor of the one laying on the couch over here. And so I said, well, you can name the dog. So she is Bella.
Okay.
Beautiful rescue, I guess.
Mm. That's a pretty name.
Yeah.
Very Beauty and the Beast, although that was Belle, right? Not
She's
Bella.
So sweet. That was Belle, yeah.
Bell.
Well, hey, I have to ask you, for so many of us, 9/11 was a change point. And you talk about that in your book, that 9/11 was a change point for you, outing your dream, as you said. Tell us a story about what happened that day and how it changed the course of your career.
So I went to a small liberal arts university in Ohio, and I majored in broadcast communications, but my emphasis, you guys, was behind the scenes video production, so shooting, editing, producing. And the whole reason that I went into broadcasting to begin with was because I had this conversation with my high school drama teacher, Mr. Barsoon, and I was like, I don't know what I should major in college. And he goes, well, you're a really good narrator in drama. You tell great stories. You can engage people. You should really be a broadcaster. So literally, that's why I went to school for broadcasting. He said, you're good at it and you love it, right? So I went to school for broadcast communications, and I always had this like longing to be on camera, but I didn't have the confidence to match. So I just stayed in my safe, secure place behind the scenes, right? Not in front of the camera, but behind the camera, even though I had people speaking life into it, people that I trusted, my professors, right? People around me that were like, actually, when you're on camera, you're very good. I just didn't have the confidence to match. And so I graduate from college. I decide to pursue video production. I'm working behind the scenes and, you know, not making anything. So I'm working at Arby's and cleaning apartments on the side, right? And just doing anything I can to pay the bills. So I got a job in radio sales, you guys. I was in radio for a little bit, and I was actually a very good saleswoman. I was rookie of the year and making great money, newly married. And 9/11 happened, and I still remember our apartment in Dayton, Ohio, watching the coverage and that tug on my heart. I really felt God saying, when I call you, I'll equip you. In the same way I was with Moses, I'll be with you. And it was in that moment, watching the coverage, just glued to the television, these stories that were coming out of the television, I finally felt like, okay, I'm finally ready to take that step and go for this. That's been on my heart, but I've been too scared to do it. So I was like, I've got to step into this fear. Right. I've got to step into it. So I quit my job in radio sales. Literally, just after watching the coverage, I really felt God just saying, specifically, in the same way I was with Moses, I'll be with you, Paula. Mm. When I call you, I'll equip you. So I went for it. I quit my job, and I was making great money. I applied at all of the local television stations in Dayton, Ohio. One television station called me back. I substitute taught in the meantime. I was a terrible substitute teacher, by the way, just to pay some bills while I was waiting for a callback.
And that's a tough job, because
that is a tough job.
Yeah. I remember middle school. That's even worse. You know, when the substitute teacher came in, the phrase was, let's sink the sub.
Yes.
They're awful. That's horrible.
So mean. Oh, it's yes. so bad. I have a ton of respect for substitute teachers because it's a tough job.
It is.
But I, you know, there was a short stint of substitute teaching just to pay the bills while I was waiting to find, you know, to get this break in television news. And so I got a call from one of the stations in Dayton to be a PA, a production assistant, making $7 an hour. I took the job. And in the interview, I said, you know, he's like, why are you leaving radio sales? You're making great money. Why are you trying to get back into television? And I said, I really want to be a reporter. I'm going to go for it. And I know this is too big of a market to start. And he's like, yeah, it's too big. I mean, it's Dayton, Ohio is a pretty decent sized market. But all of those, what I love about how, you know, in our stories of calling, like God never wastes any seasons, right? So all of the experience that I had shooting and editing and producing, the behind the scenes, right? I'm a PA, so I'm running teleprompter, or I'm doing whatever they need me to do, grunt work, okay? Also, in my downtime, borrowing the camera equipment from the guys in the sports department and, you know, shooting some videos, shooting some interviews. I shot some stand-ups. I was putting together a resume tape because in our line of work, you guys know, like you send an audio, a cassette tape. I can't say cassette tape anymore because, you know, but for us, you know, we would make a VHS tape. And that was in television. If you were going to hand your resume out, that's what you do. You'd send a VHS tape or a video. So I was putting together this resume reel all by myself, shooting it, editing it, producing it. And I just wanted to get feedback from the news director who had hired me. I said, could you just take a look at this just to give me some constructive criticism, what I can do? What do you think? And he's like, did you do this by yourself? And I was like, yeah, that's my background is production. I can, you know, one man band, which is a phrase that we use if you're like kind of doing it all, shooting, editing, right. producing, sure. recording.
Small market stuff.
Yep. Small market stuff. You know, where you make the big bucks, like seven, $8 an hour.
Exactly.
So anyway, he said, okay. He's like, this is good. Make another tape. And literally as I'm making another tape in the midst of it, this is the next couple of weeks, he walks up to me. I'm just writing for one of the newscasts. And he's like, I'm going to put you on air. He gave me my big break. Sometimes I would report. Sometimes I would run teleprompter, right? So I did that for a year. But then I got a job in Cincinnati, worked there for 3 years, and then Chicago, and then the network called and went to ABC for 9. But yes, I mean, so 9/11 was a catalyst for me to step into my fear. And that's, you know, Joshua 1:9 is really kind of, I feel like, my vocational verse, because just for me, it just speaks so much into like, have I not called you? Be strong and courageous. So for me, I felt like God was saying, you know, God commands us to be strong and to be courageous. So, and he acknowledges that our fear is going to be there, but he also promises that he'll be there on the other side of it. So have I not commanded you to be strong and courageous? Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged, for the Lord your God's with you everywhere you go. And that really carried me as I was getting my big break to press into my fear, which existed. It doesn't go away. You just have to step into it.
Oh, that's good. I like that. We're talking with Paula Ferris today. Her book is Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of True Calling. And, you know, let's talk about fear, Paula.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, because I'm scared.
I'm not scared of this topic.
Well, you know, what you did is scary, you know, leaving something big time that you've got. You know, let's just face it. Any time you put yourself out there, you might get rejected. Someone could tell you that you're not good enough. You said you had an encounter with Dolly Parton in a bathroom. And and this changed some things for you. Tell us about this.
I think that would change a lot of things for us.
Yeah. I walked in on Dolly. So it was not my finest moment. I was anchoring Good Morning America that morning with George Stephanopoulos and Michael Strahan. And she was on the show promoting her literacy cause. I love that woman. And I walked in on her in the bathroom. So, and it was one of those moments like, oh my gosh, I just walked in on Dolly Parton. But from Dolly's story, what I learned is that fear is sometimes internal and sometimes it's external. Like for her, you know, growing up in an environment where she's the only one to really make it, growing up in extreme poverty. So sometimes your fear is a result of your circumstances, right? So for her, it was very external. For me, a lot of my fears were that soundtrack in my head. You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You won't know what to say. People will think you're an idiot. So you have that soundtrack, you know, on repeat. But I've learned that, like, for me, a big lesson about fear is that it's normal. And it's never going to go away. You know, in the faith communities, especially Christian circles, we think that we're supposed to be healed of our fear, that we're supposed to be cured of it. And I'm like, no. I mean, fear is mentioned hundreds of times. We're just commanded to step into it, right?
Sure.
So for me, reconciling, especially that moment, you know, those key moments in my life where I'm getting into broadcasting, you know, around 9/11, and then where I feel like God's calling me out of broadcasting for a while at the height of my career, recognizing that peace and fear coexist. I can have a peace that I'm called to this, but I can still be so scared about it. And so for me, learning to reconcile those two things, and not that, you know, I'm like, Spirit, lead me. Oh, I'm scared. Okay, that means I'm not supposed to do it. No, actually, fear will always be in, fear and peace coexist. You can be called to something and you should expect and anticipate fear. Okay. But when you're called to it, God commands you to step into that fear, and then he promises he'll be there on the other side. So that's been a huge lesson for me, just kind of normalizing fear. Guess what? You know, like, almost everybody fears failure, right? You're not the only person. Fear doesn't mean if you're scared about a situation and fear presents itself, guess what? You're normal. because fear is going to present itself in just about every situation that you're called to. You have to recognize that it's normal and you're never cured of it. You just, God equips us to step into it, right? To be strong and to be courageous. And then he promises that he'll be there on the other side of it.
Yeah, it reminds me, John Wayne said that being courageous is being afraid and saddling up and riding anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Yep. I like that.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Because it recognizes that fear is present. And we think that it's going to go away, and it just doesn't. It's just we have to learn how to step into it.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yep. So,
switching gears here a little bit, you know, you very vulnerably share that there were some dark days in your marriage and you had to really step out of your comfort zone, but that led to some amazing rewards. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we had some really tough times early on in our marriage. And, you know, one thing I just really admire about my husband is that he stayed so loyal and steadfast to me when I really wasn't deserving of it, especially in those early years of marriage. We were separated. I wanted to move on, but he really wanted to fight for it. And I think, you know, good things that are worth having, you have to work hard for them. And we've worked incredibly hard for our marriage. Again, we've overcome a lot of things that we're both ashamed of. But I'm grateful that John fought for me and fought for our marriage when I wasn't really worth fighting for. And I'm thankful for our faith, because even though I really felt, and this is not to say, like, I have divorces in my family, right? So, you know, it's just sometimes it doesn't work out, right? But I never had a peace about divorcing John, even though I wanted to. And so I really think, like, without our faith, I mean, it's been the foundation that has stayed us, that it's been the foundation that kept us glued together, really, when I really wanted to leave. But I just say, thank God that we stuck it out, because it was early in our marriage. We didn't have kids, and we have three beautiful children, a 9th grade daughter, Caroline, and then two boys that are in 7th and 3rd grade, JJ and Landon. And I just look at them sometimes and I just am overcome with emotion, because I think if I would have thrown in the towel, and if John hadn't fought for it, we wouldn't have these beautiful children. And we have a wonderful marriage. That doesn't mean that we don't fight about, you know, who's cooking dinner every night, which is like the bane of our existence. But no, we have our fight still. But because we had to work so hard early on and really fight for it, I'm really grateful. And those rewards, the fruit of that labor, is where we are now. We've been married 22 years in September of, is this 2022? Yes, we got married in 2000, so we'll never forget how long we've been married. Turn of
a
century.
Hey, that's not fair. That's so easy.
I know, isn't it? But I still forget. I still was like, but then I forget what year we're in, which I was like, what year are we in? So 22 years. And I'm like, you know, thank God that we get what we need, not always what we want, right? I wanted a divorce, and I'm glad that it didn't happen, because we have three beautiful children, and we have built a beautiful life full of valleys, right? Peaks and valleys. But I saw a phrase it was on a church sign. It said, you wouldn't appreciate your good days without the bad days. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for our good days they came at the expense of a lot of bad days. But yeah, I'm really grateful for our marriage and our family and our children. And we fought for it.
Wow. I so appreciate your vulnerability. This book Called Out has so spoken to me and is so relatable, you know, just to know that you've walked through something. I so relate to the Moses story because the imposter syndrome, I feel that so many times, and so many times I've been offered opportunities and I've said, no, Lord, you don't understand. Let me inform you at how ill-equipped I am. And I relate to the fact that the third time that Moses objected to God's calling, it says God's anger raged against him. So I've learned to only say no twice.
Yes, that's good. Because three strikes and you're out, right?
Yeah. I don't want that third strike from God. But so I was really amazed to read, because we look at somebody like Paula Ferris and think, well, you know, that all happened for her naturally. But yet you talk about experiencing that imposter syndrome. And I just, boy, I ate that story up. I was like, okay, I need to know that somebody else has walked this walk, feeling inadequate.
I think what I learned, you know, being at the height of my career and really feeling like God called me out of that situation. And I was angry at first, like, why would you call me here only to call me out? Why would you ask me to pump the brakes? And I had to reconcile my own emotions with that. But at the end of the day, like, God always calls the unqualified. And then he qualifies us. And that's what I had to remember. It's not me. It's just being a willing vessel to step into wherever he has called me. And so, yes, I felt inadequate and unqualified and incapable. But I think that's the story of anyone who is willing to step into something that God is calling them to. It's making yourself a willing vessel to say, God, work through me, because this is not me anyways, this is you. And so when I, you know, pumped the brakes and I really felt God calling me to something else, I had to realize that my worth wasn't in my job, you know, and so often we're like, what do you do for a living? That's the second question.
Yep.
And
yeah,
it's just kind of intimated in our culture. What's your name? What do you do? That's your value. I had to realize that my worth was not in a job. My worth wasn't work. My value wasn't vocation. And my calling wasn't just my career. And once I accept and embrace that, it was like God just gave me permission to try new things and new seasons, using those talents and gifts that he has given me and the talents and gifts that he's given you, those unique giftings. And he's like, just take that into this next season of calling. And if it doesn't work out, that's not your value anyway, right? So it's kind of given me like this beautiful permission slip to just step out of my comfort zone, use my giftings in the areas that I feel he's calling me to press into my fear. And really at the end of the day, like the success of whatever it is in that season of calling, you know, looks a lot different to me. To me, it just looks like obedience, right? God called me to this. And like I formed a company, a media company to champion working moms. It was something I really struggled with in the workforce, that tension of never feeling like I was nailing it in the workplace, just not really supporting mothers and families. And so I decided I wanted to do something about it. I'm not an entrepreneur, but God just said, you know, he put this passion on my heart and I'm being obedient. I'm stepping into it and I'm using, you know, my skill and I guess you could call it talent, I don't know, is a question asking champion and challenger of people. I'm taking it into that space and obeying. And so for me, it looks, I don't know if this is going to be the end all be all for me, but I'm very passionate about it. And it's what I feel God is calling me to in this season, because I think we're called to different things in different seasons. And I had to accept that. It's not just this one thing we're called to forever and ever. Nope, God calls us to different things in different seasons. So
that's a good point. That's a good, there's a lot of transitions in life. And
yes.
And that you're not doing the same thing forever, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, you're right. It is a time and season. You know, it's interesting. You talk about being qualified, and I had this thought. If you are qualified, and if you are an expert, why do you need God?
Totally. You don't.
You don't need him.
Good point.
So, in a way, it's good to be weak.
And well, that's who God uses.
Exactly.
God uses the weak and the unqualified all the time.
Yeah.
So, boy, this is a great message.
No, thank you. So basically, we're all weak and unqualified. That's the takeaway from this conversation. We're all weak and unqualified. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But we're all in good company.
I am just a wimpy wuss. Hang out with God. you talk about, you know, giving yourself permission to branch out, try new things, and be bold when you're called to something. Talk about that.
You know, it's a lesson I learned the hard way. You know, like I said, when I pumped the brakes and I really felt that God was calling me out of, you know, that space of being a co-anchor and co-host and calling me into something totally different, I wrestled with it for a very long time. And I didn't realize, you know, I think, you know, as a Christian, you know, in working in the quote unquote secular media space, I was always almost proud and haughty to an extent that, you know, I could walk away any day from my job and still know who I was. Well, when God actually called me out and he's like, you need to pump the brakes and you need to do, you know, I didn't know what was on the other side of it, by the way. It wasn't like God said, pump the brakes and do this. It was just pump the brakes. I pumped the brakes and then I realized I had no idea who I was outside of it. And I felt a lot of shame and then anger, right? Anger for like why God called me to this and then called me out and told me to tap out. So it's just, and that's, you know, when I met David Shedd and when I went on this journey to kind of find out like, okay, like what is my purpose? And what am I called to? What does calling actually mean? Who am I outside of my job? Could, you know, when I didn't have those fancy titles attached to my name, I was just Paula Ferris. I was no longer like the co-anchor of GMA and the co-host of The View. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know who I am. And I felt a lot of shame too. Like, well, why isn't it enough to just, why haven't I rooted my identity in God? And you know, I'm a mother and I'm a wife, you know, is that not enough? So, but anyway, I just learned that, you know, the big lesson for me is we're going to be called to different things in different seasons. God kind of gave me this visual. I love visuals. And he's like, you know, I am a branch. Okay. So like your ultimate calling is to love God and love people and let your light shine. If you're healthy, then I will produce many branches. So I feel like we have a faith calling, which is to love God and love people. And then we have vocational callings, which are like branches. As long as we stay rooted in who we are, why we're here, to love God and love people and let our light shine. I think God branches allows us to branch out in different directions, always using the talents and gifts that he has given us. But at the end of the day, remembering what we're doing, why we're doing it, and who we're doing it for. So I know like I'm being called to different things in this season, but it's going to look different in a couple of years, and that's okay. And that's great. So I don't hold tight to anything that I'm doing right now, other than just trying to be obedient to this new season. And I hold it loosely knowing that my main goal, yes, my objective is to really, you know, change the workforce for moms, really, so that moms aren't a risk and a liability, so that they're actually valued by the workplace, and to really change the game for working moms. But at the end of the day, like, I want to shine my light through this. I want to be a testimony through this. That's my ultimate goal. And so I don't tie too much. I don't tie my identity into the vocational aspect. I tie it into, it's just rooted in knowing who I am, why I'm here, right? And I'm here to love God and love people. And I think we overcomplicate it.
You know, that's a good point. I think that it happened to my best friend. I used to work at another network, and my co-host, he decided to leave the show and become a full-time missionary with his wife. And he went through that. He went through this identity crisis because he was this big name on a nationwide network. And he said this. He said, man, when I left and was, you know, sitting at home by myself, he's like, I didn't know what to do with it. Who am I? He was like, I felt like a nobody. And it's like,
totally.
Well, especially if you're in a position like you were in, or, you know, you're a big name or whatever, and you get that adulation, you get that, you know, people like, hey, you're awesome. And all of a sudden it's gone. It's like, well, who am I now?
Exactly.
So you have to,
but
you're
it's
right.
Only, but you know, that's only natural because it's the way that our society has trained us to, especially American culture. You know, again, getting back to, you meet somebody new in a room, you guys, and it's, hey, what's your name and what do you do for a living?
Exactly.
So it's almost like it's, even if we're not explicit about it, it's implied that your worth is in your job. And our kids, what do you want to do when you grow up? So we're telling them that their only value is their job. So of course we hold on to it. These are, and then we hear from church, find your calling. And it's almost always your career, right? It's always career related. It's never, I mean, isn't our call to love God and love people?
Yep.
So why do we have to find it?
Yeah.
Like, so we're hearing it. We're hearing these confusing messages, complicated messages, and very ambiguous in the church about what calling is. Of course, we're going to have an identity crisis when change happens. Of course, we're not going to know who we are outside of what we do when we walk away from it. It's just natural.
Yep.
Right?
You're right.
So.
Mm.
You were talking about, you know, moms. So many people, I think, especially women, are trying to figure out their calling post-pandemic because things just changed so drastically for so many people. You know, where and how should we seek our true purposes? Like, are there questions we should be asking ourselves as we, are stepping into new seasons and new callings?
I think change is just, you know, inevitable in life, right? And, when you feel that peace in your spirit that you're supposed to do something, just know that there's going to be fear present, right? But one thing that helps me is like, what's already in my hand, right? What has God already placed on my heart? What is that burning desire? For me, it's not going away. I've got to change the workplace for moms. Right? That's just my burning desire, is to do that. I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to take the next right step. And I'm just going to take one more step towards it. So whatever that burning desire is on your heart, that's not going to go away, right? Just recognize that if you go for it, when you go for it, you're going to experience fear and you're going to have to press into it. But God's calling you to that space. You may feel unqualified, and most likely you are. We all are, right? But God wants you to use your unique talents and gifts in that space. So for me, again, going back to what am I good at? What do I love? What a trusted people notice I'm good at and I love. It wasn't that I was a good broadcaster. It's that I ask questions and I like to champion people and I like to get stuff done, right? And I like to advocate for people and I'm so, so, so curious. And that's what I take into this new space, because this passion is not going away to change the game for working moms. So find what is that thing that won't go away. Realize that if you step into it, the fear will be present, but to use the unique talents and gifts that you have in that space.
And that's Carrie Media that you're referring to. Is that correct? You gave
birth
to Carrie Media?
I did. And we called it Carrie because we want to help Carrie mothers through these really important times.
Like,
and also from a biblical perspective, it's not a faith-based organization, right? But also, you know, carrying one another's burdens, which is what the Bible tells us to do.
Cool.
So that's why it's called Carrie. It's been really scary to try something like this because
scary Carrie.
Scary Carrie, right? It's not Harry Carrie. It's Scary Carrie. So, but it's been so scary because I have felt unqualified. I'm not a founder. I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't know anything about the business world and trying to raise money, you know, from investors and go, you know, literally start something from nothing except for a passion. It's terrifying, but I just do. The next right thing. I just take the next step. I don't overanalyze it. And I keep praying. I'm like, Lord, if you want me to continue walking in this space, just encourage me. Just give me a sign of encouragement. And he always does. But I could have just said, I could have just been paralyzed. And so often we feel we're called, but we overanalyze the situation, paralysis by analysis. We don't move. We're waiting for God to move. That's not how it works. You've got to move first. You take a step, God takes a step. You take a step, God takes a step. It's like if you program the directions into your GPS, right? You don't really know. Like, it's always hard for me right at the beginning when I program the GPS. It can't calibrate where I am, and I almost inevitably turn left instead of right, but it doesn't recognize that until you start moving. And so it's the same way
when
God calls you.
It's so annoying. It does that to me too.
I know, and it's like rerouting, but Kenko Fritz, there is a biblical analogy there next time it happens to you. You don't know, because we're like, I know what to take a step, but I don't know what direction to take it in.
Right.
Guess what? Start moving. When I start moving and driving, then my GPS says, recalibrating, you took a wrong turn, I'm rerouting you. But you don't know that you're headed in the right or wrong direction until you take a step. So take a step. Just do the next right thing. It might not be the right step, but guess what? It's going to clarify the direction you're supposed to be moving in. So it actually is the right step. And when you fail, guess what? Failure is a down payment on success. Failure's normal as well. So I look at failure as kind of like a, I got to put this down payment and then I'll be successful, right? Failure is just part of the process.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. Failure is a down payment for success.
I like that.
I stole that from Craig Rochelle, so I can't take credit.
You know, we're just going to give you credit. That's not, no.
But I'm pretty sure he stole it from somebody else.
Oh, absolutely. So. Yeah. So it's all yours. It's, you know.
When all else fails, it's your t-shirt you're wearing right there. It's fine.
It's fine. I'm fine. Everything's fine.
You talk about taking a step, and the Bible says the steps of a righteous man are ordered by God, not the run.
Mm-hmm. Man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not the running, but stepping.
Yep.
So it's
That's
not
why
like,
I don't run, by the way, because God ordered us to step. That right there is why I'm not a runner.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Hey, you got to stick
there
to something.
There you go.
We're talking with Paula Ferris. Again, her book is called Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for the Life of True Calling. You're talking about supporting working mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about mom guilt. Especially
where
heavy.
Where do we start?
Yeah,
Let's
exactly.
Talk about mom guilt. Oh my goodness.
Because Paula, we hear a lot from moms that call on this show, and I don't know how many times we've heard from, I just dropped my son off at daycare, I'm heading to work, and I'm crying.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to her. What would you say to encourage her?
Well, I would say she's not alone. We've surveyed through Carrie, and about 80 to 90% of mothers feel some level of mom guilt. Mom guilt, what I've learned, though, you guys, is a very, and this is the journalist coming out in me, because I actually have a book coming out next year, which is called You Don't Have to Carry It All, Ditch the Mom Guilt and Find a Better Way Forward. And it's really, you know, baked out of my own experiences and the experience of what it's like to be a mother in the workplace and just a mother in general. Mom guilt's a very American phrase. It's a very American feeling. And we may have mom guilt. For me, I had mom guilt because I grew up in a Christian home and wasn't a godly wife supposed to stay home with the kids. And yet I had this call on my heart to do other things. My kids are always my priority. Mom guilt exists because we feel like we're not spending enough time with our children. I mean, mom guilt exists for a myriad of reasons, but something that's really helped me to kind of press into that mom guilt is A, knowing it's American, right? But like globally, mothers don't have a choice but to work. They take a great amount of pride in contributing to the family and coming home. And they ask for help. Here in America, we're almost encouraged to be mom martyrs and to not ask for help. And when we do ask for help, we're guilt tripped. We feel like we're a failure. We feel like it's weakness to ask for help. Other countries, there's so much support for families from a societal level. They may have a family member living with them. They feel so supported. Whereas here, it's just not like that, right? But I would just tell her she's not alone. She doesn't have to carry it all. And she's doing the best that she can. And she is a good mom.
Mm.
That's what I would tell her.
Amen.
We need to hear that over and over and over again. Just speaking to the men.
Don't try to carry it all.
Yeah.
Don't try to carry it all. Ask for help. You know, a friend of mine told me this, or she gave me this visual, and she's like, Paula, pretend like you're juggling all kinds of balls. And as a mother, just accept the fact that you're going to drop balls every single day, right? Drop the plastic ones, keep the glass ones in the air. So that kind of gave me the permission to not be perfect anymore. I had to drop the perfectionism. I had to ask for help. Okay. It's not a sign of weakness. I need help. I need people to help me in my parenting journey. Right? Surround yourself with people that you can do life with, that where you can help one another and you become a community, whether it's carpooling or just saying, hey, can you pick up my kid today? Or when you go to the grocery store, will you grab something for me? Like, we're not meant to do this and carry this all on our own. And yet for whatever reason here in America, it's become like this status symbol to be a mom martyr, to try to carry it all. And guess what? We're just not equipped to do that. We're just not.
That's a really good point. Thank you so much, Paula, for...
Thank you.
You know what? No, I want to say it this way, like Simon Cowell. Thank you so much, Paula, for. I always loved when he was talking to Paula on American Idol.
Paula. The most random Cankle Fritz
yes,
thing
it
right
is.
There.
I am ever.
I'm ADD it. Cankle Fritz. That's me.
I love it. So. I appreciate ADD though, because I'm chasing squirrels too. So,
oh man.
Shiny red object. I can't forget what I was saying. So
I have ADD deluxe, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. So how can people find you that you got the podcast? Now what's that called?
Yes. So the podcast is like it's called Faith and Calling. I talk to people about what they're called to do, who they're called to be. You know, it's kind of like from called out. And then, you know, I'm living my own call story with Carrie Media, trying something. I'm called to this new season where I really want to beat the drum for working moms. So Carrie Media exists. We have the weekly newsletter buy-in for working moms to just really lighten their load, called the Carry All, which is a weekly newsletter that goes out on Sunday, and we are just loving it. And working moms have been really engaged with it. So you can find me personally on Instagram at Paula Ferris, and that's one R. It's just like Paris, but with an F like Frank. So Paula Ferris. You know, you can reach out to me there. You can follow what we're doing on carrymedia.com and follow the podcast on my Instagram too. So just grateful that you guys had me on, and a big shout out to Family Life Radio in Jackson, Michigan.
Yes. Woo. Mm-hmm. That's something that we
my
found
hometown.
Out. That yeah. Paula is from Michigan, where Family Life Radio began. So that's mm-hmm. kind of cool.
Yeah. Love cool. that.
Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us. We really appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Cankle Fritz and Friends podcast, heard on Family Life Radio. We would appreciate it so much if you could rate, review, and subscribe wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts. You can also find more exclusive content at myflr.org and FLR Mornings on both Facebook and Instagram. And if you support Family Life Radio, thank you.